This is episode 13 of the Next Year Now podcast.
I started thinking about killing myself. There's no way out. This is what I've got to do. And then I guess the best way I could put it is that it's like being in a dark room and someone switches the light on. We call this in my line of work a snap point.
Welcome to the Next Year Now podcast with Tom Hefner. Tom believes that if you really want to thrive at work and in life, then every day, purposeful habits and practices are vital. The Next Year Now podcast will not only help you identify and integrate these habits into your daily life, but also bring you key insights and lessons from some of the most successful people in their fields. And here is your host, Tom Hefner.
Hello, and welcome to the podcast devoted to helping you thrive at work and in life. The topic of habits and practices is always front and center in our discussion, but we also explore how we use these habits and practices to improve our personal development, productivity, creativity, health and well-being, business, and entrepreneurship. Today's episode is a special one for all of us. That's because we're celebrating the holidays and the upcoming New Year. One of the most difficult challenges we have to navigate during this time of the year is how we can eat nutritiously and maintain a healthy weight with so many delicious meals and treats constantly tempting us. In today's interview, we get to hear from Matt Wolfs, a fitness and weight loss expert and host of the Weight Loss Podcast. In our conversation, Matt and I will be discussing the most effective habits to help you lose weight and maintain a healthy body, tips and insights to improve how you set and achieve goals, fantastic recommendations to aid us in our personal development, and so many insights and practical tools to help us. Matt's journey started when he was 400 pounds. A diagnosed type 2 diabetic, Matt had enough and decided to take control of himself, his health, and his life. After a 177-pound weight loss journey, Matt became a successful personal trainer and eventually opened up a gym in Melbourne, Australia. These days, Matt is a successful online personal trainer and co-hosts the Weight Loss Podcast with his wife, Courtney. Matt, I'm so thrilled about this conversation. Weight loss is something I struggled with in the past, and I really love learning about how we can improve our fitness and maintain a healthy weight. Thank you so much for being here with us today, and welcome to the show, my friend.
Thank you very much, Tom. It's a privilege and a pleasure.
You know, we'll have an opportunity to ask Matt all about weight loss, fitness, and maintaining a healthy diet. But first, let's learn more about him and his journey here, because it's pretty incredible. Matt, where did you grow up and what was your childhood like?
Well, born in Australia, born in Sydney, Australia, grew up all along the eastern coast of Australia. So my dad was in the Australian Navy and got posted a lot around the country. So a lot of experience living in different cities in Australia. Predominantly grew up in Queensland, which is one of the northern states of the country. So very warm, very tropical. Childhood was, I suppose, like any other kid in Australia. Liked to ride the bike, ride a skateboard in the 80s, listen to terrible music, and you know, watch TV, watch Transformers, play with toys, like standard sort of kid stuff. And had two great parents, and was very, very good until I started stacking on the weight.
Well, before I get to that, let me ask a question, because I spent some time in Hawaii going to graduate school, and growing up in California, I did a lot of surfing. Were you near like Gold Coast surf beaches?
Where I lived, Gold Coast was about probably a 2-hour flight away south. So I was at the very northern tip.
Yeah, you were really northern.
Yeah, very north, but near the Barrier Reef, near the Great Barrier Reef.
Yeah.
So beaches everywhere, yes.
Okay, cool. Talking about your weight, was that something that came on kind of during childhood, or was that something that happened, that weight gain happened later on?
Well, the funny thing is, growing up mostly as a kid, I was the tall, skinny kid, because I'm a taller guy. So grew up faster than most kids. I was sort of a normal, healthy weight until probably around age of 12, 13, 14, just the food. I started where things like ice creams and chips would be a treat. They started becoming an everyday thing. So once a week became twice a week, three times a week, and then eventually once a day. And portion sizes started getting bigger. So it just started to sort of stack on around the age of 12, 13, 14, and just blew out during my teens.
How much did you weigh at your heaviest point?
180 kilograms, which is just under 400 pounds.
Oh, wow. So, and how tall were you?
Back then, I would have been around 6 foot one, 6 foot two. I'm now 6 foot six.
Oh, wow. So you're a tall guy.
Yes.
But still being 6 foot six and 396 pounds, obviously that was probably not a healthy weight.
Oh, definitely not. And especially considering the composition of the weight. So obviously no exercise, no active lifestyle. It's not exactly like I'm going to be putting on any sort of healthy muscle tissue. So it was all the wrong type of weight. So I took up a lot of space, shall we say.
And how did that unhealthy weight impact your life?
Where do I start?
I mean, even just your physical health.
Well, it deteriorated as I got into my late teens, where I started losing my vision. Obviously, in terms of just things like going up the stairs was a challenge because you're out of breath. I eventually was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes.
Oh, my goodness.
Which came about as the vision starts to go, you start to get these almost like cravings for sugary drinks and sugary food. And I just had this sort of episode over a couple of weeks where I just couldn't stop drinking Coke. Mm. So I was putting away liters of Coke a day and eventually was hospitalized with it. So that's when it really sort of reared its head, where it's like, hey, you've got a problem here beyond the obvious physical stuff. You have a health problem here in that you have a blood sugar reading, you know, 8 times the normal blood sugar reading should be.
Holy cow.
And you're carrying all this excess weight. You need to do something about it, because type 2 diabetes is the one that is controllable and reversible, I guess mm-hmm. you could say. And it was entirely, you know, my fault that I got it, and I had to be the one that would get rid of it.
Yeah, that's crazy. 8 times the reading. I mean, I have a little bit of context and knowledge for that. My wife is pregnant with our third kiddo, and she's had gestational diabetes each time, and not because she's heavy or that she hasn't eaten well. It's just kind of a unlucky trait of being pregnant. It's gone away every time she's had it. When she talks about being just a little bit over, you know, the level at where she's supposed to be at, I think it's like 140 after an hour after eating on the glucose meter, she can feel it. She can feel it, you know, pretty significantly. So to be 8 times is, I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah, you can feel it. You can taste it. You can taste it on your breath. You can feel it in your body. I can't say I'm not a diabetic. If I had a relapse in terms of how I look after myself, it would come back. Mm. Even if I were to have, for example, like I do still love my chocolate. So I will have a chocolate as a treat once a week now and then with my wife. If I were to go overboard, I can still taste the elevated blood sugar.
Mm.
In my mouth. It's something that doesn't go away, and it's always a reminder that it's there.
So what about the emotional or psychological toll that took on you? I mean, how did that affect you?
It basically meant that you'd probably say a 16, 17 year period of my life was no real social life, no career to speak of, obviously no confidence. It was almost like a gap in my life, I guess you could say, where I just didn't live.
Wow.
Because obviously when you're carrying a lot of unwanted weight, it affects your confidence and it makes you feel like everyone is watching you, everyone is judging you. And so, you know, things like cameras would scare me. Public interaction, I started getting anxiety being out in public, because being as tall as I am and being built that way, you can't hide.
Mm.
And so wherever I go, it just felt like all eyes were on me. So I tried not to go anywhere.
You know, the biggest impact for me was, I remember being in college, my last 2 years in college, and it really started to impact me gaining weight. I was probably the typical American, went to college. I was pretty fit and played tennis, and got to college, started drinking beer, eating poorly, putting on weight.
Yep.
And I remember I hated the way that I looked. And because of that, I never had the confidence to go out and talk to girls, right? And so I never dated anybody in college. And it wasn't until I did start to lose weight, and I was actually in graduate school in Hawaii, where I got into some really, really good shape, because I was surfing every day for like 4 or 5 hours a day. So I got really good, really shape. And it was amazing the switch in confidence that I had. And lo and behold, I ended up meeting my wife there in the University of Hawaii. And it was because I had gotten in shape, and it was because that I felt confident about, you know, my own image of my body. But I do remember, and it still kind of pains me to think back how I looked at that time. And so much so that I remember a friend of mine, he found a picture of us from college, and he told me, he said, you know, I was looking at this picture and I was trying to think about who was that person in that picture. And then I realized, you know, oh crap, like that's you, Tom.
and he didn't recognize me because I was so heavy back then. And now I've obviously lost weight and kind of kept it off. But that confidence change was the biggest impact that I saw.
Yeah, I had the same thing. I couldn't even look a female in the eye for a conversation. I had no confidence when dealing with people of the opposite sex. And yeah, the weight loss had a pretty good effect on the confidence levels. It's amazing what it can do.
Yeah. And how much weight loss did you end up having?
80 kilograms, which is what, about 170 pounds.
That's amazing that you lost that much. I mean, that's almost 50% of your body weight.
It had to happen. I mean, in the end, you want to take control of your life, you've got to do it.
What was the trigger point, or what was the lowest point maybe that triggered you to make that change?
Well, I'd been at the advice of the medical professionals when I was diagnosed with diabetes. They did say, look, you know, young man, you need to lose some weight and you should probably start exercising, which is always a good place to start. So I eventually joined a gym, but was your sort of standard early days gym goer, where I guess you could say the gym is more like a charity where you're donating money to a gym membership but not actually going. So I was donating to the local gym charity. Eventually, I started to go once a week, twice a week, now and then, but I would not really change what I was doing away from the gym. And at the time, I was under the impression that if I wanted to lose weight, I had to gradually build up and do more and more and more and more exercise. Mm. So I started building up my exercise levels to the point where I was originally going maybe once or twice a week now and then to going 3 hours a day, 6 days a week. So it's almost like a professional career where I would do a very long run to the gym, a weight session, and a very long run home. And this would happen Monday through to Saturday. But then the issue was I would go home and my sort of post-workout nutrition would consist of things like chips, ice cream, Coca-Cola. I still had a massive love for alcohol at the time. And this gradually went on for about 4 years. So kind of, I guess you'd say 4 years of spinning my wheels where there was very, very, very little change. And sooner or later, I think you bang your head against the wall long enough, you're going to start to get a bit frustrated. So I started to find my sort of depression levels, my moods were getting worse and worse and worse because it was purely a reflection of my own frustration with myself and how I felt about myself. But I was taking it out on the people around me, which was my family. And I was one of those people that started cutting myself, always putting myself down, very, very negative, and it feeds into myself. And I just had a moment one day where I was having a pretty heated argument with my mum, which was entirely my fault. And I started thinking about killing myself, there's no way out. This is what I've got to do. And then I guess the best way I could put it is that it's like being in a dark room and someone switches the light on. So we call this in my line of work, we call it a snap point, where it's almost like something in your head just goes pop. And it's just like, you know what? I've had enough of this. Whatever it takes, I'm going to fix it. So both my mum and I were in a bit of a messy state. And I just said, look, I'm going to fix this. I promise. Whatever it takes, however long it takes, I'm going to turn this around. And that's that. And it's like, it sounds weird, but it's like from that moment, I went from who I was to who I am now and just went to work, as in like really actually put in a proper effort, sought help from people that I knew and trusted, and took what I was doing seriously.
Wow. There was the weight loss, and then there was the other things you were doing in your personal life, and you know, whether that be emotionally, psychologically. How did that weight loss and those things, how did that affect your life after that?
It changed it. The best way I can say it is it feels like I've lived two lives. So my first life is the overweight, unhealthy, depressed, no career prospects, unsocial version of me. The second life is who I am now, where things aren't always perfect because they never will be. Like you can't spend most of your life being very obese and unhealthy without, I suppose, carrying some baggage along the way. So I still occasionally have my moments, but in terms of how my life is now versus back then, it's two different lives because now I'm living in one of the biggest cities in Australia with my wife, who I met through my personal training career. So these are things that you would think are impossible to happen for someone who is, you know, 100 kilos overweight, diabetic and depressed. So it's like two different lives. And now it's, I suppose, the passion there is helping others.
Yeah. I mean, that's an amazing turnaround to go from, like you said, being inside, being depressed, being overweight to changing careers. You've become the successful physical trainer and coach. You've opened your own gym. And then that led to meeting your wife. I mean, that's truly amazing.
Thing is, though, is obviously it didn't happen all at once. Like we're talking the last 10 years here. So it's been a gradual thing. So I started with step one, which was, okay, maybe don't exercise quite so insanely, because apparently that didn't work. So I had a conversation with my gym instructor at the time, who I trusted a lot. This was in the days before personal training became a craze, where it seems these days like everyone's a personal trainer. But back then they were very, very rare. So my gym instructor said, look, the first thing you should do is stop doing these stupid 3-hour exercise sessions, structure it and break it down into set days. So I'd be doing weight training, for example, 2 to 3 days a week, and I'd be doing some form of cardio or aerobics work on those other non-training days. So all of a sudden my workouts would go from 3 hours down to about, 30 to 45 minutes. But they were more intense, they were more structured. And then once I had the sort of habit in place of movement and structured exercise, I then went to work on the next habit, which was, okay, what I'm eating clearly isn't helping. So let's now start to address what I was putting into my body and start to turn that around. And then it's like you address things one at a time, and you start to stack all these different achievements up, and then things just sort of build on top of itself. So even when I was losing the weight, there was no thought of, I mean, I was working at the time, I did eventually get a job in construction. So I was working in the construction industry, and the last thing on my mind was, I want to open a gym one day and be a personal trainer. It's just that as you start to commit to yourself and you start to change things, opportunities present themselves.
I want to talk about some specific habits. You mentioned some of that, kind of talked about, some of the habits you started to adopt to lose weight. But I did want to mention, which I thought was interesting about and important, about how you stopped exercising, doing these insane workouts. And I know from my own experience and what I've shared with other people, and it kind of seems to resonate, I was kind of in the same boat. I would go out and I would do these, maybe not quite as insane, but I would do these really long, insane workouts. And what I found was it would just fire up my hunger when I would do these long, crazy workouts, to the point that on the flip side, I would have, almost like binge eating. I'd go and I'd work out, I'd feel really good, and I'd, I'd have, but I would burn all these calories. And so what I ended up finding out working really well for me, and I don't know if this resonates with you, is that I had to start with what I ate, how much I ate, how often I was eating, when was I eating. That was kind of my starting point to really transform and take the weight off. And to the point where I didn't really work out all that often for the first 6 months or so. It was really just focusing on kind of what I was eating, if that makes sense.
It does. That is the make or break. Having been there myself and seen it with many people in my line of work, you can't literally outrun a bad diet. So the habits that you have away from the gym are going to dictate the results you get from any exercise you do. So what I like to sort of do with these days with myself and my clients is, what's the least amount of work I have to do to get the best result? But I was similar to yourself, where the first thing I sort of changed with what I was eating in terms of my eating habits was start to replace the obvious poor choices with obvious good ones. Because at the time, I had no formal training, but I just employed a bit of common sense. So I just thought to myself, well, okay, is having 2 Big Macs going to be as good for me as having a steak and a big bowl of vegetables and salad? Probably not. So common sense says, if I have the steak and the salad and the vegetables or the chicken or the fish, it probably can't be bad for me. So I just started going more, more sort of whole food, unprocessed foods, fresh meats, etc. And also a big thing that helped me was reducing my alcohol intake.
Yeah, that was a big one for me as well. I was drinking a lot of beer in college, and not that I was alcoholic, but I definitely, continued that love of beer post-college.
Oh, yeah. I hear you on that one. I was one of those weekend binge drinkers where I would just, I think, drink my body weight in alcohol every Saturday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. You're not good.
Well, let's talk specifics here. Matt, talk if you would about the most effective everyday habits that we can adopt to help us lose weight. So thinking about nutrition, about exercise, and, you know, mental habits. What are those specific habits that we can adopt that are the most effective that you've seen?
I think that the best way to approach it with habits is to start with the ones that are most achievable. So for most people that want to lose weight, the easiest place to start is, hey, let's get exercising. Because generally, when you're exercising, there are now gyms you can go to where you're going to be surrounded by other people, like-minded people, like, you know, group fitness classes, for example. So I personally find that starting with exercise is the best place to start. So we're not talking about, you know, any sort of insane routine, but maybe going to the gym, you know, 2-3 times a week.
Okay.
You might do a couple of weight training sessions, might do two weight training sessions, two intense cardio or aerobic sessions, and just see how your body responds. And just, you know, go for a walk on the other days. So start with the habit of movement. I think you find once the habit of movement is sort of ingrained in your routine, you can then start to go, righto, what's the next thing that's holding me back? Because I tend to find with people that want to lose weight, it's the case of how many things that are holding them back they can gradually address over time. Not all at once, but just one step at a time.
Okay. And from a nutrition standpoint, I think one of the things that's really tough is that you hear a lot of different types of advice out there for nutrition.
Yes,
should I go paleo? Should I go vegan? How much should I eat? When should I eat? I mean, what are some of the best habits that we can adopt for good nutrition and eating?
I think there's two things. I think common sense is underrated when it comes to weight loss, because a lot of us can be very desperate to lose the weight. We will ignore our common sense, where, you know, you can get things like, you know, soup diets, juice diets, things that are clearly unsustainable, and go, oh, well, I hope this works. Let's give it a crack. Even though deep down, we know we're not going to be able to keep this up for the rest of our life. So the first sort of habit I'll be looking at there is a common sense approach. Human beings are built to eat food. That's the way our bodies are constructed. So I would be saying to people, start with the easy things. So for example, if you don't have breakfast, have breakfast.
Why is that important? Because I know some people that swear by it. No, you know what? I'm into fasting and I skip my breakfast and that works for me.
Science has shown that, for example, and I was guilty of this when I was younger, we call it fasted cardio. So you get up in the morning, you have nothing in your body, and you go out for a long cardio session. That has been shown in research to not help with fat loss. So it's almost like banging your head against the wall. So getting up and having a breakfast is a good way to get nutrients into your body and get your energy levels up. So what you'll find is that as your body starts to get used to having, you know, healthy nutrients coming into it, especially when we first get up to have breakfast, for anyone that's going to do a workout later in the day, you can feel the difference. Mm. Like I know for me, if I do a workout on a completely empty stomach versus doing one a bit after I've had a good meal, I can feel the difference in my performance.
Right.
Basic little habits like that are a good place to start. And as I said, looking at common sense, if it's unprocessed, it's probably going to be pretty good for you.
So sticking to, when you say unprocessed, sticking to almost like whole foods versus kind of the more packaged it is, the more we should stay away from it.
I think there is room in any sort of balanced approach for certain processed foods. I would just say in general, if what we're having has, you know, fallen off a tree, grown out of the ground, used to moo, cluck, or oink, it's probably good for you, you know. But you'll find that eating foods is also a very personal thing and everyone is built differently. So there's certain foods, for example, that I have that my wife doesn't tolerate very well. She'll feel bloated on them, even though we're talking foods like Brussels sprouts. So foods that are very good for you, some people don't respond well to them. So what I find is also a good habit to form is the habit of listening to your body. And if certain foods don't feel good with you, don't have them.
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
There are certain foods you have where you'll feel like, okay, I feel really good on these types of foods. I perform well. I feel energetic. I feel alert. I feel mentally alert. Keep having more of them.
What about the struggle with the sweet tooth? you talked about you're a big fan of chocolate. My wife's from Belgium originally, so Belgian chocolate, you can't beat that, right?
No, you can't, the greatest.
What strategies help us with our sweet tooth if that's something that we're struggling with?
I tend to find that what a lot of people really do themselves a disservice is they try and restrict and they try and cut. So let's say we're someone that likes to have a good slice of chocolate on a daily basis, and you then decide, okay, you know what? I'm going to go cold turkey and have none. That is really opening you up to potential binge eating and having a blowout after a bad day. So I'm not a fan of cutting or restricting anything. I'm more a fan of replacing. So a little strategy that I use on my clients where I can see they have, for example, a love for chocolate or they have a taste for alcohol on the weekends is rather than say to them, hey, have less of that, I say, look, can you please have more of this? So for example, I'd like you to get, you know, more vegetables into your meals. Mm. So what I found with people is that as they start to add more quality nutrition sources into their diet, their body has a way of taking away the bad stuff. So I've had clients that I've worked with where they've said to me, you know what? I don't crave the chocolate on a daily basis anymore. Or I don't feel the need to hit the alcohol every weekend anymore. And it's come about not because I've said to them not have it, but to actually replace it and let the body do the work for them, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's funny that you say that because my wife has talked about in the past when she's exercising, when she's eating well, it's almost like success begets success. And then she either through her own good well-being from, you know, as a result of the of what she's eating and eating well, she feels good. And that in turn motivates her physiologically and mentally to eat well and to exercise more. And you kind of have this virtuous, this golden virtuous cycle.
Yep, it does get easier that way, doing it like that, because I think your wife's really on the money with that, because she's not forcing herself to have less. She's just gradually, you know, building good habits into her daily routine, and the body is responding where the body starts to want, you know, it wants to exercise, it wants to have this good food coming into it, and you don't then have to say to yourself, oh, I'm not allowed to have chocolate, because I think personally, and I've gone through it myself, anyone that wants to get into great shape, you don't need to cut all these things out entirely. Hmm. It's a case of if you're having them as a, I guess the term that we use are staple food and bonus food. So if food that you know is a bonus food is a staple, getting it back into the bonus category is going to help a lot. And replacing it in the staple category with good, you know, good healthy foods and obviously good nutritional sources are going to make the process a lot more sort of realistic and sustainable.
That's a nice mental model. I think that's the first time I've ever heard that. But I like how that it's a nice way to stratify how you eat and what you eat and help you plan what you're eating. Let's maybe switch over to habits and practices for the mental side of these things. And in particular, talk if you would about goal setting. What role does that play in weight loss? And what tips do you suggest for setting good goals?
Well, that's a fantastic question, Tom. I think goal setting is critical, but not just critical, it is completely underrated by most people. So where I see a lot of people come unstuck is they'll go, okay, I want to lose weight. I'm going to go to the gym, but there's no real plan and there's no real endpoint. So the first thing when it comes to goals is specific. You must be specific. So someone says, I want to lose weight. Okay, great. How much? How much by what time? So tip number one with goal setting is have a goal that is meaningful and personal, but is also specific and I think time bound. So if I have someone that comes into my gym and I ask them, oh, you know, what is your goal? And they say to me, oh, my goal is to get fit. My goal is to tone up. My goal is to get a bit more healthy. They're not very specific goals. Whereas someone comes into me and says, okay, look, I'm not happy. My goal is to get from a size 16 down to a size 10 bikini in 12 months. That's very specific.
Right.
So all of a sudden, you have a specific, measurable, long-term goal. Once you've got that specific, measurable, long-term goal, you can then break it down into what I call sub-goals. So, okay, we have the desired outcome. What are the goals we need to put in place procedurally to make sure these happen? So it's one thing to say, yeah, I want to lose 4 dress sizes by Christmas, for example. Okay, what do we need now to do to get there? So if someone, for example, has that goal but isn't exercising, okay, your first short-term goal is to regularly exercise as per, you know, like a structured plan, for example.
Right.
And the second goal after that might be, okay, well, let's look at what someone is doing. As I said before, there might be someone doesn't eat breakfast. Okay, my recommendation is have breakfast. That's your next goal. So they're hitting off all these small little goals that are leading towards the big one at the end. And so if you've got, for example, say a female that wants to lose 4 or 5 dress sizes, one of her smaller sub goals for 3 months might be, let's lose 1 dress size.
Right.
And it gradually builds up towards the big one, because you find that weight loss is a lot like anything in life that you have success at. It doesn't happen by accident. It tends to happen through planning, through execution, through consistency, through persistency, and going through the ups and downs. So I look at weight loss like, I suppose, almost like a job where it's like, we need to plan this out and then go and slowly execute the plan.
So it seems like one of the challenges that your clients and that we might face often is not setting specific enough goals or good goals. Are there other challenges that we might face in losing weight and achieving a healthy lifestyle?
Where do you start? I mean, support network is a big one. So having people around you that are empowering you, because what you will often find is on a weight loss journey, you're going to find the people in your life who are really supportive of you and the people in your life who maybe aren't supportive of you. So I've worked with clients, for example, where their partner has been regularly tempting them with foods that they're trying to cut out of their life or reduce. Mm. And it's not always deliberate. It can often be, you know, you're changing what you're doing, but someone else is not ready to change. So here's someone that wants to lose 20, 30 kilos, but their partner's not ready to do that yet. So they're eating what they've always been eating, and you've got all these temptations around you. So support network is one of the biggest challenges. I think also where people come unstuck is they put a lot of emphasis in terms of or into motivation. So I've had people say, I haven't gone to the gym today because I'm not motivated, not realizing that motivation is always going to be up and down. And it doesn't matter who you are, I'm no different. My motivation levels fluctuate wildly, where a lot of people miss the fact that it's not motivation that gets you through this, it's commitment. And that's where that goal setting comes in that I said earlier, mm-hmm. having a very specific, powerful, personal reason why you are doing it will mean you won't need motivation because you're committed to a task and you're just getting it done. So that's a stumbling block we come across, as well as support network. I think that plus the goal setting are pretty much the three biggest challenges.
And what are some of the strategies that you employ for community and helping them build the right kind of community to maintain that commitment?
I think putting them around people that on similar paths. So something that I'm very sort of big on when it comes to who I work with in my own line of work is there's a specific type of person that I like to work with, and it's someone that I can personally relate to. So it tends to be a certain type of overweight person. So I have a group of clients that I work with who all have backgrounds and stories that they can all relate to with each other. So we don't, for example, I don't have one client who wants to be a marathon runner and one client who wants to lose 45 kilos. There's no connection there. So I tend to find that putting people in support groups and communities that are populated with people that have similar experiences or similar goals makes it easy for them to connect because they feel like they're on the same path. And all of a sudden, they then feel like they're not alone. Because one big thing that people get with this whole weight loss process is they think they're the only person going through these things. So it's easy to think, I'm the only person that's an emotional eater. I'm the only person that is afraid of overeating, for example. And all of a sudden, if you're surrounded by people that have similar hurdles and obstacles to yourself, you don't feel like you're the only person in the world that's going through it. And it's then easier to talk about it and easier to address it.
There's strength in numbers, right?
Absolutely. Yes, 100%.
Look, if you're listening to Matt right now thinking, well, that's great for someone like Matt, but it's different for me. My life is crazy busy. I have kids. My work schedule is chaotic. Busy keeping up with friends or whatever that is, then stop what you're doing right now and listen carefully to my next question for Matt. Matt, talk about what the busy person can do to lose weight. What are the best tips and strategies to help those people among us?
All right. Step one, everyone is busy. Everyone is busy. Understand that. Step two, I think, is it goes back to the goal. So if the goal is rather ambiguous and not specific, it's easy to put it on the back burner. So it always goes back to, why are you doing this in the first place? If someone hasn't got a very powerful reason why, it doesn't matter how busy they are or they aren't, it's not going to happen. So it starts with the reason why you are doing it. The next step is then to understand you don't need to do as much as what you think. So the average person should be exercising for around about 3% of the week, which is not much.
What does that translate to in terms of, I can't do the math in my head right now.
You're looking at about, with my clients, I start them on 2 weight training sessions a week, about 45 minutes per session.
Okay.
And 1 to 2 30-minute intense cardio sessions a week. So you're looking at a combined total of about 2.5 hours a week.
Okay.
Which is not much. So my advice to someone that's insanely busy is start small and gradually build your way up.
What are some of the best tools and resources to help us, whether we're the busy ones or we're somewhere in between, on our journey to lose weight?
I think it's the people that's around you to begin with. I tend to find that Google can be our worst enemy. Anyone that goes and types the term how to lose weight into Google is going to come back with about 500,000 different resources that all sound very convincing, but all contradict each other. So I tend to find the best resources are the human resources you put around you. So if, for example, you have your own trainer or your own coach, or you have your own training partner in the gym, having people around you that are going to sort of inspire you to do the best that you can do. In terms of knowledge, well, this is where I think it can be dangerous, because the internet is so full of information that contradicts itself that it just leads to confusion.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to find, and this is going to sound a bit left of field, but let's look at a supermarket, for example. You go into most supermarkets and you'll tend to find the foods that are going to really help someone get into fantastic shape, fantastic health, tend to be on the outside aisles of the supermarket. At least in Australia, on the outside of our supermarkets, we'll have the fruit and veg, we'll have meats, frozen berries, etc. Mm-hmm. The processed foods tend to be on the inside. One of the best resources can be your supermarket. Just looking at what you're putting into your shopping trolley.
It's a nice rule of thumb, kind of best practice, just stick to the outside.
That's where the bulk of your shopping trolley should be filled from. Yes, definitely. I still have certain processed foods, because processed foods, as I said, they do have a place. They tend to be had around the time of my workouts. But most of my shopping occurs on the outside of the supermarket. I'm not really a fan personally of things like meal plans, just because they don't teach anyone any good habits. I tend to find that one of my favorite sayings is, if you give a man a fish, he eats for a day. If you teach a man to fish, he eats for a lifetime. I found that in my line of work, meal plans, for example, going online looking up meal plans don't work.
Why is that?
They don't teach good habits and they're not specific. So let's say, for example, we go and find a meal plan that's for an active male, and 2 active males go and look at this meal plan. One of those active males is me. So I'm very tall, I'm very powerfully built. The other male that looks at this meal plan is 5'6", about 80 kilos in body weight, where I'm about 110, and we are built differently, but we're having the same meal plan, the same volume of food. It's not going to work for at least one of us, is it?
No.
Because one of us is probably under eating. So the thing is with meal plans, they're not specific to the individual, and they don't teach you about yourself, about your habits, and about what works for your own body.
That makes sense.
What my wife and I do with our clients is we teach them how to construct their own meal plans based on what works for them and what their body likes.
Teaching a man a fish.
Bingo. You have to. I think you have to, because in the end, what we don't want is to have these fantastic before and after photos that then have the after photo that's worse than the before photo, because what someone did to lose the weight wasn't sustainable, or they didn't learn the habits that will help them keep the weight off. Because it's one thing to lose it, it's another not to find it again.
You talk about some of the things that you and your wife do with clients. You guys also have an amazing podcast called The Weight Loss Podcast, where you tackle the hard issues of weight loss and help people to achieve their weight loss goals. Can you tell us more about what types of topics you and your wife cover and where we can find and listen to your podcast?
All right. Yeah, happy to. The podcast is The Weight Loss Podcast, which you can find at theweightlosspodcast.com. The most popular episode we've done so far is the one where Courtney and I talk about emotional eating, which is not a huge surprise because it affects everyone. I think being human means you're an emotional eater of some kind. We've spoken about emotional eating. We've spoken about comparing yourself to others. We've spoken about our own personal journeys where we interview each other on the ups and downs of what got us to where we are. We did recently an episode on injuries and exercise, where we interviewed our personal sports physiotherapist talking about working around certain injuries. We pretty much cover the whole base on the issues that come up with weight loss in terms of, you know, what makes a good support network. There's one episode we did that was a bit of a highlight for us, was what makes a good personal trainer, because there's a lot of them out there, but what's a checklist for actually knowing who's worth the time and who's not?
Do you have any resources that you and Courtney have put together to help us get kickstarted on our weight loss journey?
Yes. On our website, we have a free fat loss e-course, which is a daily course emailed into your inbox, just with some little hints and tricks on things you can do to help get things started in the right direction. And on our website, my beautiful wife has a fantastic e-book called About Overcoming the Mental Hurdles That Prevent Us from Losing Weight. So a bit of a how-to guide for dealing with things like, you know, emotional eating, comparing yourself to others, fear of failure, things like that.
Matt, before we close out our conversation, I want to segue into one of my favorite parts of the show. And this is where we focus on the topic of books and reading. I think one of the most effective habits we can all adopt. And actually, reading books is what helped me lose weight when I was struggling. I remember being probably, so I'm about 5 foot eight, and I'm in college at my peak. I think I was 210 or 220 pounds when I finally said, okay, enough is enough. And I started combing shortly after college. I started combing through the library and bookstores to find books on healthy eating and cooking. I found a book by the Men's Health magazine editor called The Abs Diet that talked all about nutrition and making better choices and what to eat and how often to eat and how much. That's what turned me on to kind of a more whole foods diet, if you will. And that book had probably one of the biggest impacts on my life, because ultimately I lost over about 50 pounds and have kept it off now for more than 10 years. In that same spirit, think about the books you've really loved over the years, Matt. What are the two or three books that have impacted you the most?
The first one would be a book, an old book called The Power of Less by a guy named Leo Babuta. It's a book that taught me how to focus on one thing at a time. In this day and age, multitasking appears to be the craze. And I tend to find that that approach, especially when it comes to weight loss, where people try to fix everything at once, tends to backfire on us. Because when something goes wrong, we tend to think we've failed. So the book called The Power of Less really helped me mentally focus on literally doing one thing at a time, but doing it very, very well. And I've applied that to my own personal life and to my professional life. And I also apply it now with my clients. And it has been a godsend. So I can't recommend that enough. And my other favorite is from Tim Ferriss, The Tools of Titans.
Oh, yeah. That just came out relatively recently, right?
Yep. That is a magnificent read and highly recommended to anyone. If you want to get some of the insight into what, you know, billionaires, icons, performers, et cetera, have done and what they do on a daily basis, I can't recommend that enough. It is a big book, but it is worth every second.
What was one of your favorite insights or takeaways from that book?
As simple as it sounds, but just having a plan of what you're going to do the next day. So finishing the day with having a small little list of what you plan on doing the next day, rather than going into the next day and going, okay, what am I doing today?
Why has that been so effective for you? Or how, maybe?
Because rather than getting up for the day and thinking, okay, what am I doing here? And then I suppose you'd say flying by the seat of your pants, you have a strategy each day and it leads to more productivity. Mm. So I tend to find the more productive that I am, the more time I can then spend you know, doing other pursuits, like, you know, going out with my wife or, you know, personally relaxing or something like that, where if I'm not prepared or I'm not planned for what my tasks are for the day, I tend to spend hours figuring out what I'm doing. So it's just an unproductive way to spend time because, as you know, time, you don't get any refunds on it. It's not coming back. If you've wasted it, it's gone. But just a little strategy like that goes a long way because every day you sort of hit the ground running, so to speak.
Builds in some positive momentum at the start of the day.
Oh, does it ever. And I tend to find then that, you know, I'm ideally getting, you know, maybe 2-3 different positive things done each day, which doesn't sound like much. But if you're averaging that every day over the course of a year, you've probably done a lot of things.
Yeah, definitely. What books are on your must-read list, or what are the books you're looking forward to reading the most?
Well, it's funny you should mention that. I've actually been sort of moving over more into listening to my books recently. I've got nothing off the top of my head right now that I'm actually looking forward to reading. I'm in the process at the moment of, I suppose you say, going through the technical side of upgrading our podcast.
Okay.
So I'm reading a lot of quality guides on improving, you know, our production values, improving our scheduling, things like that. So I can't offer too much insight into books that are coming out, but the two I just mentioned are the ones that have had the biggest impact on me the last couple of years, without question.
Okay. In the spirit of give and take, I will offer a book recommendation for you, and it kind of ties into when you're talking about intrinsic motivation and finding kind of that meaning and purpose to help propel us through with the proper amount of motivation. But I just interviewed a good friend of mine, Emily Esfahani Smith, and she wrote a book called The Power of Meaning, Crafting a Life That Matters. And so I think you will, there's a side of that, talking about kind of intrinsic motivation and how we derive meaning in our life that I think you would really dig.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. Looking forward to reading that.
And finally, what are you working on now or in the future here that you're really excited about? Like, what's next for you?
I think for us, what really is sort of got my fire lit is that we're going to be running a transformation challenge in the new year, where when the time comes, we will be offering a certain amount of spots for listeners of our podcast to join the team with my wife and I, and we're going to guide them through their own transformation through next year. So we're getting all that ready in the background, getting ready to launch in the new year.
That's awesome. I mean, what a way to have such a personalized and probably huge impact on people's lives.
To me, it's life affirming, just being a small part of someone's improvement in their life. So Courtney and I, we do it just because we love when our clients say to us, like, you know, you've helped us. I mean, you can't, that's priceless. You know, it's, Our clients do the work. We are just a guiding force. They're the ones doing the work. But even just having that small role in someone's change of their life, it's, you can't put a dollar value on it. It's worth every second that we go through. It's worth all the frustrations. I can't say that what we do is the best job in the world because it doesn't feel like a job. I would say it's the best paid hobby you could ask for because it feels like you're making a difference.
And I think you are. And I think you're making not a small difference, but a huge difference. Cause I remember what it was like to feel when I didn't have a positive image of myself, when I didn't feel confident about myself. And when I did finally lose the weight, right? That's such a magical moment in your life. And when you're doing that every day for people. So I think you're having a huge impact on people's lives, not a small one, a huge one.
Well, thank you. Yeah. It's a privilege being able to work with people. It's, you know, it's, you form relationships with people that last the rest of your life because you don't go through this process with someone without having a connection and a relationship. So I've got clients of mine that, you know, I'll be friends with forever because you've gone through this experience together and come out the other side and their lives are completely different and you just got this lifelong connection and it's priceless.
Matt, that's all I have. I want to thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and being on the show today with us. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you so much, Tom. Really appreciate it.
You can connect with Matt online through a variety of ways. His Twitter handle is @TransformMP, and his website is totaltransformations.com.au. All the links and resources Matt and I discussed, including the free fat loss e-course he and his wife Courtney created, can be found at the page created just for this episode. You'll find it all at nextyearnowpodcast.com/13. And finally, just a reminder, if you like the show and enjoy learning from our guests each week, please consider giving us a rating and review on iTunes. It helps us stay relevant and findable by listeners like you. That's it for today. Have a happy holidays and a safe and wonderful New Year's. I'll see you next time.